Welcome back to another episode of the CSK8 podcast. My name is Jared O'Leary. Each week of this podcast is either a solo episode where I unpack some scholarship in relation to computer science education, or an episode with a guest or multiple guests. In this week's episode, I'm having a conversation with Napia Nabuya, and we discuss Napia's journey into how COVID has impacted learning in communities, the next It Girl, being a role model for wellness, suggestions for working from home, the influence of fashion and design on Napia, our thoughts on the value of education, and so much more. You can find the show notes for this episode at jaredoleary.com, where there are hundreds, if not thousands, of free computer science education resources, as well as a bunch of drumming and gaming content. There's a link in the app that you're listening to this on. It'll take you directly to the show notes. You'll also notice that this podcast is powered by Boot Up Professional Development, which is the nonprofit that I work for. Check out bootuppd.org to learn more about the free computer science education curriculum that I've created, as well as the paid professional development that we provide to districts across the nation. But with all that being said, we will now begin with an introduction by Napia.
Hi, I'm Napia Nabuya, founder of The Next It Girl, infrastructure engineer, and I'm excited to be here.
Can you tell me the story of how you got into IT and CS?
I got started in IT and CS back in high school. The high school I went to gave us the opportunity to be able to go to a vocational school or to do half a day at school. I chose the vocational school, and from there, they gave us a few options of certifications that we could get, different courses that the vocational school offered. One of them being intro to computer video and graphics. A few others were masonry, cosmetology, nail tech, electrician, different things like that. My interest was around computer video and graphics. Up until that time, I was always playing with computers at my house, doing little tedious things with my computer, the house computer at the time when we were still using dial-up. And from there, I enrolled into that program and I actually attended the program for 2 years. I took the beginner class, then transitioned to the intermediate class. And by the time I graduated high school, I had a certification in computer video and graphics. Back then, it was around when PowerPoint was starting to become a really big thing. Editing videos, video photography was also becoming a big thing. So those were some of the things that I learned. And by the time I graduated high school, I wanted to know more about it. So that made me want to pursue a computer science degree in college.
It's really interesting. Where was the high school, if you don't mind me asking?
Somerville, South Carolina. So right outside of Charleston, about 10, 15 miles outside of Charleston.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a great opportunity to get some education and experience and whatnot before graduating from high school. That's wonderful.
Right. And I think a lot of high schools are actually doing it now. I feel like I was at the beginning of this wave of let's get students prepared for careers, even if they don't decide to go to college. I know little cousins that, you know, are pursuing just different opportunities in high school, you know, being able to get credits, you know, that they can apply to college or getting more certifications by the time they graduate college. So I think schools are doing a better job now of preparing students for both options if they want to go to college or straight into the workforce.
Yeah, I know it's a little weird for me to say it because like of how long I was in school, but I am a huge fan of not going to college for a lot of people. Like you can do so many cool things, so many careers, so many hobbies, whatever, by going and continuing education outside of the university and collegiate level and whatnot.
Absolutely. I'm realizing that now. And it's just like, we didn't get that opportunity. I graduated high school 12, 13 years ago now. So college was your only option, right? We didn't know anything else unless you were going to be a mechanic or, you know, just a blue collar job, especially in the South. You know, you don't hear about just these amazing opportunities. So I knew right out of high school, college, I had to go to college in order to gain a profession that was going to bring in the money for me.
I'm curious. So for myself, I've had a lot of experiences, both positive and negative, that had a profound impact on my own understanding of education, like whether I really enjoyed it or I was like, no, I hate this. And for you, I'm wondering if you could tell a story about like an experience in education that kind of impacted your journey into IT and CS.
Oh, great question. A specific story. We were tasked with a project during the computer video and graphics course. And side note, our teacher was phenomenal. Like I said, with PowerPoint, slideshows, Adobe during that time. I don't have a specific story, but she really challenged me to pursue learning more about the graphics outside of what she was teaching. So it's like you're in this class for 2 hours of the day. You leave your home school and go to this satellite school for 2 hours of the day. There's only so much she can teach us in this short amount of time. So I think what really pushed me, because I'm still best friends with other students who were in that class, and none of them pursued a technology career. And I think just her pushing me to learn more outside of the class setting, you know, telling me just different programs to learn, you know, spend more time in this area. And I want to say that was my ultimate push, because I'm from a family where nobody else are engineers or are in technology. So seeing just her representation and I guess hearing that push from her just really pushed me into it.
Yeah. And the way that you framed that in terms of like the importance of learning how to learn, because you're going to have so many opportunities outside of when the teacher is there. That's something that would sometimes frustrate kids when I work with them. I'd respond to their question with a question, and then they'd be like, why don't you just answer my question? I'm like, well, what are you going to do if I'm not there to answer your question? Like, how would you figure this out? Let me help you do that.
Right, right. And I think that's what she was giving me, because even though a lot of the projects were in class, this is before like everybody was having laptops, right? So you had to have a desktop computer at your house to continue learning about what we were learning in class. And we had a desktop computer home that I just spent so much time on. And every time she would just introduce a new concept, I would be home working on it after that. I have this high school box in my mom's garage right now. And I just think about, you know, pulling little projects that I did out of there, just simple stuff that we would think is just super small to us now, like creating PowerPoint slideshows or editing videos, which everybody can do at this point. But that was a big deal back then.
Yeah. And it's interesting to reflect on for myself, like the advantages and privileges that I had because I had access to technology at home. And then when I see some of the kids who are like super passionate that I worked with, like in the CS classes, where they're like, all they want to do is just like code in whatever platform they were working on. But then when they get home, they didn't have that opportunity because they didn't have a device. This was like before COVID. But then other kids who did could like go home and work on stuff on the weekends. And so it definitely had like an impact on equity issues related to that.
Not to jump ahead, but where I am a big advocate of with our organization, the Next It Girl, we get asked all the time, who's our target audience? Is it middle class students? Is it underrepresented students, low income students? And I'm like, it's everybody. Everybody, I want every young girl to be able to have this opportunity of exposure. And, you know, how they are able to get that, we want to bridge the gap in terms of you don't have wireless internet, you know, let's get her a MiFi. You don't have a laptop, let's get her a loaner laptop. I just don't want it to be a barrier in between these kids having access to education.
I'm curious, because of COVID, the device and internet access has kind of, from what I've seen, changed for the better for a lot of kids, especially in like rural and low socioeconomic communities. I'm wondering if you have noticed that as well, if kids are having more access to devices and internet at home now because of recent developments and whatnot.
Yes and no. Yes, with the virtual learning, every kid had to have a laptop or a school issued a laptop. I guess a lot of schools were seeing just the risk of kids being able to use home devices, you know, just the threats among security. So I was very happy to see that, or kind of curious, like, oh, where did all this money come from all of a sudden to provide every student with a laptop, right?
Yeah.
On the downside of that, I see that at the end of the school year, now all of those devices have to be returned. So from August to May, it's great. They can have these devices. They're limited to what they can utilize it for. I will say we had an example of this. I want to say this was last summer because we've been doing virtual learning for our organization for this is our third year doing it now. And they had restrictions on using the USB port. So we gave the girls different devices that they needed to complete, you know, their summer camp, and we would get errors, you know, completely disabled USB ports. They couldn't utilize some browsers that the software we were using needed to be. It was only required through that one browser. So at the end of the day, I am happy that they are getting these resources. But then I also see the downside that it is for a limited time only. And also, it's not fully functional if they want to do other things outside of whatever their school district makes them use it for.
That is such a good point. I hadn't ever thought of that. honestly. So like when I hear about the discussions, it's like devices and access to the internet. But yeah, just because you have access to the internet doesn't mean you have access to all of the internet. It doesn't mean you have access to all the capabilities of the device.
Yeah. It was really hard the first year we did virtual learning for the summer camp, is because we were all experiencing it at the same time at first, right? It was a first for everybody. So thinking in our head as an organization, like, oh, you know, they have devices, it's cool, they're doing their schoolwork on it. But then it's like, we bring in all this new equipment, things that, you know, these school district IT departments have not thought about that these kids may ultimately want to use their device for. And now we're blocked on certain things. So we did have a moment where certain girls could not do certain parts of the summer camp because of that. You know, getting them set up on now their home computer now so they can utilize it. And they've never used their home computer before. They're used to a mobile device. So it was a lot of challenges that first year. So I'm on the fence on both sides of it. So yeah, it's a yes and no for me.
Yeah, my wheels are spinning. So I appreciate this.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like future grants and whatnot. We need to address that in some of the proposals. It's important.
So I'm even like in talks now, which is like, how can we get grant money for specifically the next IT Girl issued own devices? We got laptops donated maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, but these were like the real bulky laptops. I'm trying to think, was it HPs or Dells? I can't remember. The ones that weigh about 30 pounds, fully functional, great. So that's what we're sending out to the girls as loaner laptops. And they're looking at them as they're the most archaic things in the world. And I'm just like, it works, but it works. So just looking for being able to grab grant money to where we can issue our own things out to students and they don't have to go through that troubleshooting, you know, 30 minutes of troubleshooting during our program that takes away from their learning time. Yeah.
Yeah, we get that with our professional development where like a district will block like the website like that we're using or whatever, like the device just isn't working, or they roll an update and like didn't tell them that it was going to happen. And
right. Now you got to go through the IT department. I need this approved. I need access.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing.
Yeah. And every district is different in terms of like how much permission they give to teachers. Like on one of them, they gave me like an admin level password where I could bypass some stuff. But then on another one, like they blocked like my course access to the graduate courses I was taking. It's like, why can't I go to my course? Like, you're blocking that?
It's horrible.
I'm curious, from an organizational perspective, how do you hope to close like the gender and race gaps that are pervasive in tech?
It's still ongoing. I don't have this is the end all be all. It is something new every couple of weeks, to be honest, as different things are popping up. Right now, our game plan is just to continue to create exposure programs to these young women who are aspiring to be in tech, or they don't know anything about tech and considering it to just be an option because they're hearing so much about it. The next IT Girl focuses on exposure programs that are beyond the buzzword of coding. They hear it in school so much. They hear it on TV whenever they take, you know, their computer class at school. It's just coding, coding, coding. Like I mentioned earlier, we're currently in our summer camp right now. And one of the girls said last week, I don't like coding. I did it in school and I hate it. I don't understand it and it's hard and just all these negative things. So we create this sisterhood is what we like to call it. It's just like, these are women or young girls who are going to push you because they're aspiring to do the same thing. So I stopped the summer camp. I can't remember what we were doing, but I stopped it. And I was like, everybody unmute yourself and say, Brittany, you got this, right? So just encouraging her is just like, because she just kept throwing all these negative words out. What I told her, and I was just like, you do know, you may never get coded, right? You may never understand it, but that is not the end all be all for you to be in tech. There are thousands of other roles that are going unfulfilled right now that you don't even know about because you haven't been exposed to them. You never heard of them. So what the next IT Girl does is we have our meetings prior to our program year starting and say, this is what's hot in technology right now, UX, UI design, drone technology, artificial intelligence, all these things, or this is what's the next big thing about to come out. Let's do programs around these things so the girls are understanding them more. They may hear about it, but they don't know anything about it, right? And not only that, how is it then circling back to what they do in everyday life? So going back to the summer program that's happening now, our 8 to 12 year olds are learning about intro to IT. So we're starting with the beginning basics. This is what a computer is. This is how it started. This is why it started, et cetera. And last week they were talking, the topic was around programs, like how programs are created. So very simple, it's a series of steps that us as programmers create for a computer to do something. The computer does nothing without us telling it how to do it, right? It will sit there. We create these commands. So we go through an example of name a program that you use in everyday life. They started just naming things, right? After we explained this, simply what a computer is, they quickly understood, I use computers every day. Microwaves, washing machines, my Roomba robot, vacuum, my car is a computer, you know, just different things like that. And I had to laugh. One of the girls said, but won't all of these make us lazy? All these programs make us lazy. And I was like, lazy or convenience? And I said, the laziness is up to you, right? If you get so accustomed to these things and, you know, I don't want nothing unless it's automated. But I said, I think about convenience. I was like, okay, if you think it makes you lazy, don't use your washing machine anymore. Don't use your microwave anymore. Don't use your hoverboard anymore. All of these things are programs and we use them in everyday life. So the goal right now is just to keep creating these programs that expose them to different technology concepts, ultimately, so they can find what their best interest is in tech. And we're not pushing technology on them as well. So it's not like you have to go into tech. It's just like, no, what is your hobby? You like, you're a musician. You can be a producer, you can be an engineer, right? Just all of the industries that y'all are interested in, they all tie back or technology is integrated in it some way, somehow.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. A lot of people who talk about CS in particular, it's often from this almost like a colonizing perspective where it's like, I like this thing, so you're going to like it too. And it's like, no, maybe.
And I wonder if that's what they're being told in school, right? Because it's not like they're learning about other things outside of coding. They were like, I don't like Scratch. And I'm just like, please give these kids something else because that's all they've been exposed to, right? And it's just like, I took it one semester. I hated it. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, in my own classroom, the former classes that I worked with, they had several options for platforms. Like, hey, if you're interested in games and stories, maybe Scratch. If you're interested in music, Sonic Pi is great for that. If you're interested in art animation, Khan Academy. If you want to make an app, cool. Swift, Xcode, like, here you go. What do you want to explore? And then kids appreciated that because they actually got to, like, take what they're interested in and explore that as opposed to me saying, hey, you're going to make this thing that I'm passionate about that you might not care about.
I wish that was discussed more in school, but then I also know it's a barrier for what the teachers can teach as well. Because a lot of the times, whoever is teaching that Scratch class or whatever the coding class doesn't have any computer science experience. They don't have any technology experience. They're just giving teachers the curriculum and they're just word for word reading it to students.
Yeah, which kind of brings me to another question that I have. So whenever I prepare for like podcast interviews, I'll read just like any kind of media that I can find on a guest to just learn more about them and the organizations they work with. But something that stood out was like the mentorship that you offer for kids, especially with your focus on like wellness and holistic health. So the way that it was phrased in one of the responses that I saw was you were talking about how not only are you trying to build like self-confidence and worth in students through mentorship, but also to model how to manage it all. I'm curious if you could talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, it's a daily task for me. I'm not even going to lie. I am having to redefine it every day. Holistically for me is taking care of my mind, body, spirit, and soul every day. So putting my phone on do not disturb at a certain time, right? Making sure that I'm focusing on myself from this time to this time. So my do not disturb hits from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. So you cannot get in touch with me after 10 p.m. at night or before 10 a.m. the next morning. So, and I could be doing absolutely nothing. right? And that's just me prioritizing myself and me setting boundaries, because social media is addictive, right? I can scroll Instagram for hours, right? That's one of my approaches. Also, you know, just how am I feeding myself throughout the day? So I'm an engineer, I've been an engineer almost 7 years, and I can easily get overwhelmed. Like, I am always super anxious when I'm doing like code changes, or I'm on call when we doing escalations. I'm just always really anxious, like, oh, what if I take this server down? Or, oh, what if this, you know, the wrong semicolon here will completely just throw this code? I'm always on edge, and I feel like it may never go away. I feel like that paranoia is just a part of being an engineer. So making sure I'm listening to something that's also calming me throughout the day. So I as well listen to podcasts, I'm listening to inspirational music, or listening to, you know, an interview of one of my favorite artists or actresses or actors or something like that. And then also being mindful that working from home now, that I need to get out of this space at some point in my day. I was working from home prior to the pandemic. So all in all, I've been working from home maybe 6 years now. So it's a long time. And what I first realized is you work longer hours working from home. So I have friends who are just like, oh, I want to work from home position. And I'm like, it's not all it's cracked out to be. Like, I don't know if anybody else is saying that who works from home, but for me, somebody who likes to be out, likes to be doing things and social, being confined to your house and walking 20 feet, you know, every day is not like my ideal, you know, life. I had to, you know, get invested in a co-working space. So, you know, if I feel like I need a change of scenery, I can go 10 minutes down the street to a co-working space, go to a coffee shop. But being able to get outside of these four walls, now that I'm confined to these four walls to work, is a really big deal for me. So if I do decide to stay home working one day, that I'm leaving, I'm going to the gym, I'm, you know, going to run some errands, I don't want to do food delivery one day, I need to get out. I'm one of those people where I thrive from sunlight. So I need to make sure that, you know, my body is getting that vitamin D, you know, every day if possible. So those are just different things I do. And drinking water. I love water. I am not somebody that drinks a lot of juice. I don't drink soda. So keeping myself hydrated, taking vitamins, juicing, smoothies, that is my holistic approach and wellness that I also like to tell the girls as well, because if I don't feel well, that translates into my work as well.
Yeah, and the connection between just like mind and body, I don't think people realize that and focus on that enough. Like, the reason why I work out so much, and the reason why I drink smoothies as my breakfast and lunch, it's like vegetables and fruit and whatnot. And the reason why I do that is because it has a profound impact on my mental health. And as somebody who suffers from like chronic depression, I need to make sure I monitor that, because otherwise it could spiral out of control. So I try and avoid that.
I know. And I was just having a conversation with a friend, and she told me she doesn't take vitamins. And I was like, what? I was like, you need to take, why don't you take vitamins? I feel when I have like, I've ran out of vitamins and I have not started taking, I know exactly when I'm not taking vitamins. Like, I feel it immediately. So it's just little things, and I miss the in-person connection, but then I'm also finding how to adapt to this to where I don't feel like I need to be back into an office to thrive as well. So like you said, drinking my smoothies, you know, I was just telling, you know, some friends, we all skate, roller skate, like let's go roller skating at Piedmont Park this weekend, you know, just different things like that. It's my way to decompress, and then also a way for me to still enjoy myself and not get tiresome. Because like I said earlier, working from home, you work much longer than what's expected and don't even realize it.
Right. Do you have advice for people who might find it difficult to kind of separate their leisure space from their workspace? Like if they're in a small like studio or one bedroom apartment and like their office is like literally in their living room, basically.
That was me. I just bought a house last year. And prior to that, I was in a 750 square foot one bedroom apartment. Outside of my bedroom was my kitchen, living room, office, workout room, all in one space. And I knew then when I started working from home, I was just like, yeah, I need more space. Advice, take breaks. If you can't do like a long extended period of time, just take like 10, 15 minutes. I made a point, I think back to when I was in my apartment, I would set times where I would go check my mailbox, you know, even if all of my bills are e-bills, right? I get everything to my email, but just walking down to my mailbox and then going to see the leasing agent, you know, me and her were really good friends. So just going to talk to her. I used to live in an area where we had lots of trails and the trails were so long. So just going and walking 10 minutes down the trail and coming back, but just setting and planning out your day worked for me. And I have to give all the credit to my friend, Karen, rest in peace. Karen definitely was an avid planner. I have never met somebody who had so many planners and notebooks and stationery. And before she passed away, I said, sis, we really need to get your stationery business up and going, because she would always send me links like, you need this planner. I love this planner. And I just felt like, and it's still not organized, but I felt my life was a little bit organized, a little better. And I found myself being able to keep myself accountable, you know, when I saw something written down versus, oh, shoot, I forgot to take that 2-minute walk today, or I forgot to go to the mailbox. I see it written down, so I know, okay, I need to stick to this because it's physically written and I can see it. So I'm holding myself more accountable for it.
Yeah, time blocking and planning and whatnot has definitely helped me out. My first therapist that I went to helped me go through that process, and it made me realize, oh, I literally don't have a single moment to myself. Like, this is like during my undergrad when it was like, I start teaching at like 7 a.m. and then I go until class until like 7 or 8 p.m. at night, and there's like no breaks in between. So,
Oh, no. I definitely learned the hard way where I would start working at 9, and then next thing you know, I look at the window and the sun is setting. It's 7:30, 8 o'clock, and I haven't took lunch.
Yep.
I got a whole bunch of snacks at my desk. I gained a whole bunch of weight from there, and I was just like, yeah, no. Can't do this.
Yeah, it's like a gift and a curse. It's great that able to sit and focus for that extended period of time, because I'm able to do that as well. But it's also so detrimental to your health when you don't take those breaks. Like when I was painting the house many years ago when we got it, like I literally just like didn't even think about food and forgot about it and was like, oh wow, I've been painting for like 15 hours today. I need to stop and like actually take a break and probably open up windows.
It was all trial and error for me. Was it things that I tried that didn't work? Absolutely. The committing to going to the gym every day was the hardest thing that I ever put down in my planner. So I had to start setting realistic goals. And then once I set those realistic goals, then pushed a little further past that. So instead of saying, I'm going to go to the gym, you know, every day this week, I was just like, I'm going to go to the gym for 15 minutes. Let me set like a mini expectation, you know, just to see if I meet that. Okay, I did 15 minutes. Okay, now I'm going to work out for 30 minutes on Thursday. So being able to set small milestones for yourself. And I think it's the same way with any goal we set in life. It's great, you know, we have this big picture, but how I goal set is just like, okay, I know I want to, you know, get my PhD, but what are the steps I need to do to get there first before I ultimately reach that goal? I need to make sure I have work-life balance. If I don't have work-life balance now, I'm damn sure not going to have it, you know, pursuing a PhD. That's just how my mind operates. Like I see the end goal, but I know there's obstacles in between that I need to deal with first before I get to that.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, work-life balance is definitely something to get a hold of before you start PhD.
Hence why I have not gotten it yet.
Yeah, give it time, plan for it, and then it's worth it in the long run, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, well deserved, I tell you.
I'm curious if we zoom out. So like when I was looking at the different materials like on your website and whatnot, like it seemed like tech, wellness, but then also fashion and design was kind of another pillar for you.
I'm a self-proclaimed it girl. I coined that for myself. I was a teenager. I have always had a passion for fashion since the very beginning. I think it comes from both sides of my family, my mom and my dad's side. I'm Nigerian. So if you know anything about Nigerian culture, we are extravagant in everything that we do, from our small birthday parties to weddings to funerals. Everything is just a celebration. And that is also reflected in what we wear as well. Growing up and just seeing and wearing clothes that embody colors and it and patterns and designs and things like that has always attracted my eye. And I was always very particular about what I wore, even as a little girl. And then on my mom's side, she, her sister, and my grandmother were all seamstresses. So my mom made all of my prom dresses. My aunt did a bridesmaid's dress for me in a wedding. And my aunt tailors all of my clothes now. And it's full circle, right? Even though I don't have the talents of sewing that, but I still, you know, embody that. So in high school, the goal was to pursue a fashion degree. I wanted to go to SCAD. I wanted, you know, to be in the fashion industry some way, somehow. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I know I wanted to be in that industry. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, I knew I needed to go to college and have a promising degree where I knew I could get out and start making money immediately. My parents were a little hesitant about fashion. For one, they were paying for my school. So it was kind of like, okay, you need to do what we want you to do. So I kind of put fashion to the side and decided to do technology because I was equally as passionate about technology as well. Even though I was not pursuing a degree in fashion, I still have my independence with what I wore to school every day. And looking back now, I was looking at some pictures just from college. Like I was doing a lot dressing and going to class. Like now the kids are just wearing sweatpants every day and slides. That was never me. I was getting dressed every day to go to class. So I was still embody that. That never left me, even though I was still pursuing a technology career. I get out of college and I'm still thinking like, how can I tap into this, you know, this fashion side? That's when like blogging started to become a really big thing. And people were just like documenting, this is what I wore today. Instagram just hit the scene and people were actually taking pictures and posting them without the filters and the good quality photos. Like it was still very, you know, fuzzy photos back then. And I was spending a lot of money on clothes, like always hitting Express, American Eagle, Old Navy, and, you know, just with the college budget I had. And I said, okay, I'm gonna start a blog called The Next It Girl, just chronicling what I was wearing that day. The hottest thing out right now. I followed all the designers. My goal was to go to Fashion Week and, you know, just a typical it girl. And I graduated college, went to Indianapolis. That's where I got my first tech job. And that blog got nowhere. I did not have the time or the commitment like I thought I did to post pictures every day, write paragraphs about what I was wearing, tag it, all this other stuff. And I was just so disappointed in myself because it was just like, wait, I love fashion all these years, but I didn't have the commitment to really put into this blog. So the blog was called The Next It Girl and it sat idle. I had the domain and everything for so long. I was at a point in my life where I was just like, God, what is my passion now? Because I felt so defeated, like that I thought fashion was just going to, you know, this fashion blog was going to be it for me. I always say God really revealed it to me because I was like, what am I supposed to be doing? When I first got my first tech job, I just saw and I noticed around me, I was the only person that looked like me. Didn't see any other Black people or Black women in the engineering or technology space at the company I started at. That was really bothersome for me coming from the South and then moving to the Midwest. It's just like, where's all the Black people here? And it felt, it was very uncomfortable for a long time because it's just like, I didn't felt like I belonged. All my coworkers were white, over the age of 40, kids, grandkids, pets. And here it is. Here I am, this single Sex in the City, you know, I'm right out of college, living my best life, you know, making good money. And I can't relate to you, sir. You know, it was really hard. I didn't have a community at my job. And I thought for sure, like before I moved there that, you know, you see the office and you just think like, I'm going to get along great, whatever. No, that was not it for me. So I was just like, I need a sense of community. you know, people who I can call on and be like, help me with this code change, or can you review this on GitHub for me, something. And I did not have that. So I kept having this idea of creating a business around getting more women exposed to technology. It was, at first it was just women. I started with just women. But then when I did more research, I realized that women of color were the most neglected in this industry, meaning we weren't exposed, or we attempted to pursue but fell off. And all of that just really intrigued me. But then I dug deeper and I realized, well, once we're at, you know, 25, the age I was at going through all of this, it's a little too late, right? I've already considered another career path. I'm already out of tech. We need to hit these girls when they're younger, expose them when they're much younger. So that's when I decided, like, I want to do young Black girls. At that time, it was still an idea. I still have the paper of where chicken scratch and just me writing out what this business was going to be. And I'm going to forever hold on to that paper. Just writing it out and just bouncing that idea off of friends and family members. And they were like, yeah, good idea. Da, da, da. So I sat on that idea for, oh my gosh, months after that. And the leap of faith was a pitching competition had just started. Shout out to Kendria for Pitch Feast. I believe it's a nonprofit where they help entrepreneurs get exposure to their programs and pitch their idea in return to get startup funds and just startup resources. Great, great idea. And I decided to apply. I got accepted, had nothing, had that notebook, 8x11 piece of paper. And all I had was ideas of what I wanted this business to be. No logo, no website, nothing. So I was just like, you know, I'm gonna just go, because she was like, no, it's for anybody who's, you know, completely at the ground level to somebody who already has something functioning. So I went, and I have always been a part of public speaking things growing up. I've done pageants. I've been on projects in high school that has always had me in public speaking spaces. And for some reason, I was stuttering Stanley that day. I could not articulate anything when I went up there to talk about the next It Girl. And I was so embarrassed. My mom flew into town. My little cousins, who I'm trying to get to pursue tech, is in town. And I invited all my girlfriends in Indianapolis there. And I'm just like, I am embarrassed. It was so, oh my goodness. I was so embarrassed. And I just could not believe. I knew for sure. I, like, when I went back to my seat, I was telling my mom, like, yeah, we can go. Like, let's just go. And she's like, no, you don't quit. You don't give up. Like, we got to hear the winner. So the concept is, it's patrons, you know, that are there who are judging the startups, and it's audience vote. So whoever gets the most votes gets the prize at the end. If I remember correctly, the other two contestants were somebody who had a full functioning mobile app, and then somebody else who was like in the process of had like a beta app as well. And I'm just like, look at them. Like, there's no way they're going to vote for somebody who had nothing but stuttering words. She comes back up there and she's getting ready to announce the winner. And she was like, yeah, Napia with the next It Girl. And I'm just like, what? Are you serious? And I was just like, did y'all just watch exactly what happened? No lie, Jared, to this day, I have never rewatched the video back. My mom recorded the entire thing. I refuse to watch it. And this is like 7-8 years later. I still have not watched that video. So from there, I can't remember the exact dollar amount, but I think I got like $350, which was thousands to me, right? For somebody who didn't have anything at all. I got legal advice. Somebody helped me set up a website, just all these things that startup founders need when they just have that idea. From there, it took off. Like, that was the ignition that I needed to, you know, send me off. And it's just history ever since.
So if there was a young woman who's listening to you right now and it's like, I want to do that, what advice might you give them to pursue a passion like that?
Take leaps of faith. I had nothing. When I say nothing, I had nothing. I got a logo done like 24 hours prior to that event. Like, it was calling one of my friends, like, you know anybody that does logos and has a quick turnaround, which is still the same logo that we use to this day. But take leaps of faith. And if you're sure, you know, that this is something that is needed, something that you have faith in, I say, why not? Like, what's the worst that could happen? I was okay with getting denied or knowing I did a bad job that day. When I walked to my seat, I had already accepted that I was stuttering all over the place and that I was going to lose. I was totally fine with that, right? But to hear my name called, the organization, I'm just like, yeah, this is an out-of-body experience right now. I don't understand what's going on. I'm not one to say, like, have that much faith in yourself, because sometimes it does take people around you to see something that you don't see. And I didn't see that, right? I knew the idea that I had, and I knew the impact and just the meaningfulness that it would bring to so many people. But I needed people to continuously speak life into me and speak life into this idea for me to pursue it. So I'd also say community. Make sure you have a strong community around you that's, you know, still pushing into you when you want to give up. But first step is just taking that leap of faith, whatever that is for you. If that's writing the business plan, that's emailing an investor you have not even met yet, that if that's going door to door with just flyers, take that leap of faith. Like, sometimes you got to go to like the very basics of things in order to, you know, get that like humbling experience. Like, I believe in this idea. Like, this will be something huge one day. I believe in this idea. I need other people to see it as well.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. That definitely resonates. I'm kind of curious, like, so one of the quotes that I read from you, I wonder if it relates to this or if maybe not, but the quote is, find your inspiration. Your work is not for you. It's for someone else.
Oh, yeah. It has such a totally different meaning today. What I was referencing when I first said that, but I always say it's bigger than me. If I'm doing it for me, then I will always let myself down, right? I get denied a grant tomorrow. Oh, well, it wasn't meant to be. Or, you know, we don't get full registration for a summer class. Oh, we can just cancel that summer workshop now. I've had so many of those moments. And if it wasn't for thinking about what the girls would lose at the end of the day, you know, this representation, this mentorship, this exposure, I would have already been done with this. Right. So it has to be bigger than me in order for me to still keep going and really have that passion and fire behind it. What that means to me today, we lost one of our team members about 3 weeks ago, Karen Vaughn. And Karen was, oh gosh, Karen was a gem. Karen, during her time with us, sacrificed so much. She was a senior software engineer, been in tech, and she would always correct me. I would say 17 plus years. She was very specific. Let these people know how long I've been in this industry. So she was a veteran. I would always look to her for advice and just direction and how I need to grow as an engineer. And I just think about how Karen was passionate, and I mean passionate, about showing these girls mentorship in terms of what she learned over the years. But not only that, but helping them to become the next it girl. In her time of her being sick, she didn't complain and sacrifice, you know, her time just to make sure that she was present for these girls. And to me, that's exactly what that quote represents. If that quote was personified, it would be Karen. So like I said, it has such a different meaning now. I'm seeing it done in person versus me saying it. I take that with me every day. And it's just like, Karen was pushing through at some of the worst moments in her life, right? And I just think about how she still showed up for these girls. She was still present for these girls. She scheduling things through her own, you know, personal schedule outside of, you know, anything that we had going on. And I would always tell her, we would be on breaks for the organization. I'm like, Karen, we aren't on break. We are not working. Like, can we rest? And she's like, I know, but I have these ideas and I just need to get these ideas out. So she was always thinking beyond herself. At her memorial, the preacher said, the goal is to help somebody else. And that's what Karen did. So that quote is Karen. And it has such a greater meaning to me now.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. It definitely resonates with my own approach. Like all my career decisions have been like, how can I increase the impact that I'd like to have on the world, or even some of the volunteer stuff. Before COVID, I was a team lead for Habitat for Humanity. So like helping build houses and whatnot for people who couldn't afford them. It's nice to be a part of nonprofits in particular, where you're able to focus on helping other people.
I think about what, even career-wise, that's ultimately my goal. Every time I'm like job hopping or looking to grow my career, it's just like, does this business do anything that I would say I'm passionate about at the end of the day? Or am I just working here just for a paycheck? Like, do their solutions or their services have a greater impact beyond the CEO, you know, getting more money? Like, what causes do they care about, you know, things like that? So I'm really big on that now and at this stage in my career.
How do you kind of like iterate or practice your own abilities, like to get to the next stage, whether it's like as like a mentor or in tech CS educator, however you want to conceive of that question?
So one thing I said to myself prior to me starting the next It Girl, I was a heavy advocate of being volunteers for other organizations. Once the next It Girl started, it became increasingly overwhelming to where my time had to be fully into the next It Girl. But that's quickly when I realized, okay, we need a team now. So being able to bring other passionate individuals who care about the same thing, seeing more young girls of color in tech or STEM or, you know, whatever it is that relates to our mission, I still want to give back to other organizations, because just like we're in need of volunteers, desperately another organization is as well. So I make a point to, even with COVID, virtually volunteer or virtually participate and give back to another organization. I'm really big on giving. Like, what goes around comes around. So I want to plant seeds in another organization, because we're getting all those seeds as well. We're growing, and I want that for another organization as well.
Yeah. And then you learn new things, like new skills, or you network with more people. Like, it's win-win all around.
It's win-win all around. And I am not a end-all be-all. I do not know everything. Prior to the next It Girl, I had no nonprofit experience. And it's crazy to me when people come and ask me, and I'm just like, I still don't know. Like, we are literally going through this together every day. It's something new every day. So I'm learning from y'all who have been in the industry for years. You know, this nonprofit's been around 30 years, and I'm just like, help us. You know, we need this help as well. So I feel like that's how I grow as a founder. Like you said, being able to pour into another organization, I get something back out of that. And I'm able to also put that back into our organization as well.
Yeah. And getting outside of the comfort zone, like even this podcast, like I'm an introvert and I did not like the sound of my voice. And so those two things, you'd think I would not have a podcast, but we're now approaching like 150 episodes. And so this was uncomfortable for me, but I learned a lot.
That's like a daily prayer for me. Like, God, push me out of my comfort zone, because I am a creature of habit. I am self-aware to say that. I love what I love. I am not ashamed of that. But I can get complacent in things. If it's not broke, don't fix it type of thing.
Yeah.
I subscribe to that. And I have to be pushed out of my comfort zone sometimes. Like I said earlier, that's why I'm not afraid to say I don't know everything. That's why I welcome new ideas. But I do have to be like, you know, you can do this, or try it at least one time. Just be pushed out a little bit.
So that leads to a question that I like to ask guests. And so what's something that you're currently working on that you could use some help with?
Ooh, great question. The organization, we are in our, I believe this is our fifth programming year. So we have been doing programs for 5 years. We are looking, number one, always have volunteers, right? The Next It Girl mission is representation matters. So as much as we're teaching these technology concepts, we need the representation to talk about whoever it is they doing it on a day-to-day basis, how they got into it. Basically, kind of what you asked me in this podcast, like, our girls love to hear from other women, men who are already trailblazing that path. I think it's a great moment to step away from the curriculum and just be like, hey, I'm a UX UI designer by day. This is what I did to get in the industry. This is what you need to know to get in this industry. I think that's what fuels the girls even more. Like, I'm actually seeing somebody who does it. So many great connections have come from that, having guests, volunteers, and speakers come on during our programs. Aside from that, just, you know, scalability and exposure. Like, we're hosting other workshops, new topics this year around digital design, intro to Procreate. The girls, you know, get ready to learn about hand skill, you know, digital design, graphic design. So that's amazing to introduce these new concepts. So we're always looking for volunteers. However you think your skills can be utilized within the organization, we'd be more than happy to have you.
Okay, so what do you wish there was more research on that could inform your own practices?
I think around the demographics, racial disparities in technology, but being able to bring research on where the disconnect in certain demographics are for technology to be exposed. So why the same opportunities are not in Chicago public schools, but are in the Chicago suburbs. I guess around just like the same technology opportunities, if that makes sense. I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to funding, but you would think public schools would have the most funding overall over like certain charter schools or, you know, private schools. But it seems like the schools that are not inner city schools are the schools with the most funding, are getting kids the exposure, the opportunities that a lot of other kids are not. So I'll talk about my hometown, for example. My hometown is right outside of the city of Charleston, but it's still considered the same area. And it was only three high schools that had access to the vocational school that I mentioned earlier. The inner city schools, the Charleston County, the directly inner city schools that were predominantly Black schools did not get those same opportunities. Now that, you know, technology has progressed and school districts are now seeing, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of these kids don't have the ability to go to college. They're investing in career centers now. So I know three career centers popped up for the inner city schools where kids, same concept like I had earlier, had the option to split their school day and go and get certification. So but I had that opportunity 13 years ago. These kids are now just getting this opportunity within the last 2 to 3 years. So I think research around that is important because a lot of inner city schools are definitely behind, but how can we as founders, researchers, how can we bring awareness to this, show these statistics in order to get more availability to them, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. I'm going to do a improv strategy with like a yes and to say, yes, I love that. And we should also focus on the pedagogy differences between the two places. And the reason why I say that is because I've spoken with some people who, when working in suburban areas, they will often use pedagogies that focus on creativity. Let's just have fun creating, making interesting things. But then in inner city schools, I've heard some people use pedagogies that I'd consider to be very problematic because the focus was on obedience and following directions. And that does not sit well with me, in my opinion, and probably doesn't sit well with kids. So even if they do have access to tech, they might be taught in a way that makes them go, why would I want to do this? This isn't interesting.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good. That's a really good add-on as well. I think that's always been, you know, low-key bothersome to me because I grew up in a predominantly white town. It's a very small 5-mile, 7-mile radius town, right? Where it's predominantly white. Majority of the population is older and very quiet, quaint town. And I had that opportunity so long ago. And as the organization is expanding and we just planted a chapter in Charleston and we're getting this, you know, hey, this new career center just opened. Wait, just opened? I had that opportunity, you know, 13 years ago. Why did it take 13 years later for the inner city school to get it as well?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if anyone happens to know any research that might assist, then please feel free to reach out to us and let us know.
Yes, I'm all for it. If I ever, you know, pursue a PhD, that would definitely be my topic.
Are there any questions that you have for myself or for the field as a whole?
It's a two-part question. How do you feel about the state of technology now, and how do you feel about the alternatives available for not getting college degrees to get into technology?
So for CS, I feel like we're in kind of like a weird space where, let's say maybe even 10 years from now, this isn't going to be as big of a problem. We're coming at this from like two ends of the spectrum, in that we have teachers who are now learning how to code and learning what computer science is. They've never done it before, and we're working with them. And they are teaching kids who are now starting to learn this. But then somewhere in the middle, we have students who are becoming teachers who have never experienced code, and they're like just now graduating. But 10 years from now, like, that is going to be few and far between. Most people will be like, oh yeah, I remember when we did programming in second grade, and I've been doing it ever since. And so it'll be much more commonplace. They'll know what it feels like, looks like, etc. But we have this weird, like, we need to provide professional development, like the nonprofit that I work for does that. But then we also need to provide pre-service education to help. But then everything we do now is going to need to scale more down the road, because, okay, right now we can often assume fifth graders don't have experience. So we just teach them as if they're brand new to coding. But what about if they had several years of coding experience before that? So it's kind of like this weird, the field as a whole, if we're at like a, I don't know, a 7 on a scale, we're going to just have to keep every year moving up and increasing like what the expectations are. But then how do we take into consideration locations and like communities that don't have access to CS still? And like, they just kind of increases that divide. So I don't know if that kind of answers the first part of that question. We're in a weird space.
I agree. I think we are as well.
So the second part, the alternatives, like, I know it's weird coming from somebody with a PhD, but like, college is often overrated. And there's a lot of like wonderful things you can learn even on YouTube, like, or Udemy or whatever.
All the college you've done at this point. So that is a big coming from you.
I mean, it enabled me to do very specific things that I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to do research. So getting a PhD made sense. But for most people, you don't need to do that. You don't even need to get your undergrad to do some really awesome things. Some of the best educators I've ever had did not have college degrees. And they were phenomenal educators, better than some educators who had teaching degrees.
Yep.
So I'm a fan of like more opportunities, more avenues or paths for people to take that isn't the traditional take out like $60,000, $70,000 of loans and get a degree in something you don't care about.
Yeah, I agree. I wish the alternatives would have started back when I started college, because it's just like, dang, look at all these loans I have to pay off now. Kind of similar to what you just said, I think I got what college did for me. I understood the why behind it versus just learning the concepts of how to do something. So I understand the textbook of what computer science is on the logical standpoint of it versus just seeing and being taught how to do something. So I feel like you get the best of both worlds in college versus when you go to a boot campus. This one skill, we're going to learn HTML, CSS. So I think that's the benefit of college. But then again, for somebody who I knew to be in this field immediately, boot camp all the way, certification all the way. Yeah.
Yeah. And for what, I had a lot of students who were just amazing people, but really bad at school, or they just didn't have that, why should I do this? So they failed a lot of classes. So how are they going to get into colleges? And there needs to be other opportunities for them. Or what about people who decide down the road, oh, I want to actually go back to education, and college might not be the path for it. The more the merrier, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So then the last question that I have is, where might people go to connect with you and the organizations that you work with?
Yes. So anything regarding The Next It Girl, you can find us at www.thenextitgirl.org. And we are at The Next It Girl on all platforms. Please keep up with us. We have our programming year just started 2 weeks ago. So We are releasing dates of upcoming programs. So like I mentioned before, volunteers, we are always looking for representation to be a part of our programs and just engage with our girls as well. Like I said, if you think you have a valuable skill that can be translated into the organization, I'd love to have a chat with you as well.
And with that, that concludes this week's episode of the CSK8 podcast. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Napia. I certainly did. And I hope you consider sharing a review or sharing this podcast with somebody else who might benefit from listening to it. Friendly reminder, you can find the show notes at jaredoleary.com, as well as hundreds, if not thousands, of free CS, drumming, and gaming resources, because I like to create a lot of content. Stay tuned next week for another episode. And until then, I hope you're all staying safe and are having a wonderful week.